aren't even real Jews. So no one knows who has the majority in Israel at all today. But it's impossible to argue. So those are the only two choices, but the Western leaders are totally indifferent to the Palestinians. So this mess is going to continue. It's not going to be solved. But what the Palestinians do need is some support and some solidarity from people like us, just as a gesture that we know what you are going through. Even that helps. And the courage of these young people from the International Solidarity Movement, young Americans, young Britishers, young French, who go and face the bulldozers, and people like Rachel Corrie who get killed, has a massive impact. And one of the things it does is it breaks through purely seeing the crisis purely in terms of identity. Why is this young American girl of Christian origin coming and doing this? Why is this journalist of Jewish origin defending us more vigorously than some of our own journalists are capable of doing? All this has a big impact on Palestinian consciousness. And that, apart from all the other reasons, is why international solidarity is so important. And where does this leave the globalization project? Pushing through the steamroller, crushing everything in its path, not caring about who suffers, ignoring the sobbing of the weak. The continent where this challenge has been taken up and turned against the globalizers is Latin America. If you look at Latin America today, and I would strongly urge you to do so because it's very life-enhancing and fills one with hope. In every single Latin American country today, you have a large social movement fighting against globalization. When Che Guevara was in Bolivia in 67, he was completely isolated. The peasants were indifferent. The workers didn't particularly care. He was surrounded, killed. Today, in that same Bolivia, the giant social movements of peasants and workers against privatization carry giant portraits of Che, echoes of history. They remember this guy came, gave up his life to fight for us, we did nothing, now we are fighting, and they carry his portraits. If you look at Peru, the peasants in Cusco defeated attempts to privatize an electricity company. And they said, their leader said, we don't have to read too many books to understand that if it goes into the hands of the crooks, we will suffer. In Brazil, despite Lula's failure to break with the IMF, the movement of landless peasants carries on fighting with more and more support. And in Venezuela, which is today the jewel in Latin America, the Bolivarian movement has defeated three attempts by the United States to defeat it and overthrow it. When the last time when the United States organized a coup, an amazing thing happened. The elected president, Hugo Chavez, was locked up. What happened? When news went to the shanty towns in Caracas, a roar, slow roar began as people began to march to the Miraflores Palace in their hundreds of thousands. Simultaneously, as the general who had carried out the coup was swearing in one of the most corrupt businessmen in the country as the acting president in front of the international media, the New York Times, by the way, wrote editorially that with the overthrow of Chavez, democracy has been enhanced in Venezuela, like it was enhanced in Chile. The general came out of the palace and spoke. This is an amazing event, episode in Venezuelan history. Came out where the band was present, young soldiers who play the national anthem at ceremonial occasions. And he said to them, the general, think about it, I'm just bringing the new president of Venezuela out, and when he comes, all the cameras are here, you play the national anthem like you do when Chavez comes. That was the first the soldiers had heard that Chavez had been toppled. They said, what? Who new president? We elected Hugo Chavez. And the general said, look, you will obey orders. I'm ordering you. And the soldiers said, but general, we want to ask you, who is the new guy? He said, that's not your concern. And they said, we elected the last guy. Who is the new guy? And why is he here? And then the general, despairing of talking to the soldiers who were slightly older, turned to a 17-year-old kid who played the bugle. And he said, you, boy, when I bring the new president out, you will play the bugle. And the kid said, general, with great respect, who is this new guy? We elected Hugo Chavez. This conversation happened, and finally the general said to the young man, I am ordering you. You will play the bugle. And the boy turned to the general and said, general, you seem very keen that someone should play the bugle. Here, you play it. Now, the interesting thing about this is not that it's a nice story, but the interesting thing about this is what happens to these young soldiers to change their consciousness, their political way of thinking, to such an extent that they can defy a serving general who has just carried out a coup d'etat. And the only answer is that they feel empowered. And the reason they feel empowered is because they believe they have a government which does some things for the poor, for them, for their families. And the soldiers then began to organize in the barracks and confronted their officers and said, if you support this coup, you will support it alone. You don't have our support. And within 48 hours, the coup had collapsed. Chavez was speaking to 1 million people on the streets of Miraflores Palace, and soldiers were cheering in the barracks. Big defeat for the United States. They tried again 6 months later by organizing a middle-class strike like they had done in Chile against Allende. Same pattern. Doctors on strike, teachers on strike. Because Venezuela is a very hierarchical society. Divided society, and it's the only country, and I've been there 6 times in recent years, it's the only country where class and race are parallel. The upper class and the middle classes are lighter skinned, and Chavez and the people from below are dark skinned. And it's a deeply racist society. Deeply racist. So they were organized saying that, you know, these blacks have put a monkey in power. That's how they described Chavez on the privately owned television network. So they organized a strike. And Chavez, when I did a long interview with him, said to me, I was much more depressed by that strike than I was by the coup. The coup I knew couldn't succeed. But these guys were crippling the country. Our oil had been stopped because it was a corrupt union leadership in the pocket of the oligarchy. And the teachers and doctors had stopped. So he said, I was very depressed. And the right-wing press was saying, if the kids without work can't have their beer because the breweries were on strike, there will be a revolution from below. And he said, I went into the shanty towns that day, just with 2 or 3 friends, and an old woman grabbed me by the neck, and she said, Chavez, I want to show you something. Come up to my house. So he went to house, was an exaggeration, to her little slum. And she was cooking some soup. And underneath the soup, she had taken the legs of her bed to heat the soup. And she said, today we are having the soup with heating some food for my family with the legs of the bed. Tomorrow, the whole bed. The day after that, the table. The day after that, the 2 chairs, we don't want you to surrender. Don't cave in to these people, because if you do it now, we are finished. And he said that gave him so much confidence. And then he said as he was walking back to his car, these kids came rushing up. and said, Chavez, we live without beer forever, but don't you cave into these guys. And he said, then he went back and they decided that they were going to take these guys on, and they did. So he said, what we did, we challenged the whole structure of that place at the time. And he said, as I sometimes do when I'm feeling very depressed, I rang Fidel. And I said, Fidel, what are we going to do if we don't have medicines? He said, within a week, there were 10,000 Cuban doctors and crate loads of medicines all over Venezuela, and we set up the clinics in the shanty towns. Which shows it can be done if you have leaders of vision who are prepared to take on oligarchies and their backers. It can be done. And this model in Venezuela, which, by the way, the reforms they are pushing through are tremendous, but it's what in the old days we would have called traditional left social democratic reforms, state-owned health service, free education for the poor, universities for the poor, land to the slum dwellers, all this wonderful stuff. But in today's world, it seems ultra-revolutionary because it challenges the whole way in which neoliberal globalization functions. And that's the threat. And that's why the Brazilians say to their leader, Lula, if Chavez can do it, why can't you? And Lula says he's got oil, we don't. There's an element of truth in that, by the way. To which Chavez replies, we will give you oil at very cheap prices, just do it. Do it. We will do deals with you. Kirchner in Argentina is asked by the piqueteros occupying factories, if Chavez can do it, why can't you? He says the Americans won't let us. We are weaker than Chavez. The point I'm making is that the whole continent is now polarized. This is why everyone is worried that they might try and bump off Chavez. It's become a serious question now in Latin American politics. How will they let this survive? To which the Latin American leaders say, thank God for the Iraqi resistance. It's keeping them busy and occupied for the time being. That's what they say when they talk to each other. Their minds are off Latin America at the moment. But nonetheless, the lesson has to be learned that a continent united is difficult to defeat.